Blog Talk.
Hello everyone, join us tonight for another hour of life listener style conversation and discussion and learning as we nosh on the current events and trends with a spiritual perspective. You can join in the conversation of our show by calling 646-727-3206. That's 646-727-3206, or you can go online to the chat area. We'd love to hear from you. So let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight.
Okay, hi. This is Robin Masevich. I'm one of the regular diners here at the Transformation Cafe. Woo-hoo! And again, just to remind everyone, if you go to the if you're listening online with the Blog Talk, we'll have the chat room open. So if anybody has some questions, we actually have a guest chef in the house tonight, and we'll be talking to him in just a couple seconds about his book. It's a wonderful book that he had put together that we're really looking forward to hearing more about the developments of that and what that was all about. So we have Mr. Jamie. Hi, Mr. Jamie. How are you tonight?
I'm doing okay.
Good. Okay.
Doing okay.
Just to kind of give you, you want to introduce yourself and kind of tell everybody a little bit of who you are, just in case we have new listeners.
My name is Jamie Trujillo. I'm a friend of Robin's from high school. I also have been calling in for quite a while, and I have a tattoo shop up here in Seattle, Washington. It's called Chromome Tattoo, and I've been here about 14 years, which I'm really proud about. But we're right in the middle of a little Arctic blast snowstorm, and I tell you, it doesn't take much to shut this city down, that's for sure.
Yeah,
cool.
Jamie was sharing with me earlier. He had had been talking online, and he had said that there had been snow, but right before we went on the air, we were sharing about the pipes have been freezing in the city because it's so cold. Yeah.
It's not this cold. It shouldn't be this cold this early.
Yeah, well, we just want to send all our prayers out to everybody, and then, you know, they get the protection and support that they need, and they can enjoy just the change of the weather and have it not be such an inconvenience for everybody. So I want to make sure to put that out. And again, I'm Robin Masevich. I have a flower shop called Flowers for You in Riverside, California, and it's been my passion for over 25 years now, and I just love being a florist. So if you're in the Inland Empire of California and need my services, just go ahead and be looking me up with Flowers for You, and we can go ahead and serve. So tonight we have a guest chef in the house. We have T.D. Austin. He is the author of People of the Bear Mother. And I had met Mr. Austin, a few weeks ago. I was a guest speaker out at Interfaith Church, which is out in Palm Springs. I go out there once a year and as a guest speaker. And we were focusing on the month of November. And I did a talk called The Thanks Code out there for everybody. But we're going to talk about we're going to talk to T.D. tonight about his book. It's a story of a young woman's adventure of initiation with one of the great painted caves of the Stone Age is done in France that will resonate with anyone who is afraid with the choices of how they have to live as truly human life under any circumstances. Little Bear's encounters with her own wise mentors provide some surprisingly universal answers to such questions of the human existence as how we are to acknowledge and balance our feminine and masculine energies that we're a part of with every one of us. And that was actually a testimonial introduction from Marsha Engel, which is the author of Amazing Women, Amazing World. And she's also the CEO of Envision Network and the Amazing Women's Day Seminars. So I've got a couple other ones here that are just really wonderful. Well, let's get T.D. on. Hi, T.D. How are you tonight?
Great. I'm glad to be with you.
I'm glad to be with you. Welcome to be one of our chefs at the Transformation Cafe. We love having guest chefs on and just kind of talking about what they have a passion about and what they're doing in the world. So we've got Thanksgiving happening this week, so I thought it would be really lovely for all three of us, since we're the only ones sitting up at the table, but I'm sure we're going to have more people coming on, about maybe what we're thankful for this year. So would you like to go first? I know I'm kind of like throw you in there, but you are a guy who can handle it. So what are you thankful for, TD?
Oh, so many things. I'm thankful that my creative side is really blossoming and is sort of manifesting itself as this series of novels. And then this, of course, is the first one in a series. It's just a whole new life for me. I've come from academia and totally left brain kind of concerns, and that's the only kind of writing I've ever done. And to have this opening of my, you know, my right-brained, creative heart thinking is what I'm really tremendously thankful for this year.
Okay, very cool. And Mr. Jamie, what are you thankful for?
Oh, I guess being safe and sane and, you know, trying to do the right thing.
Uh-huh. And you do that every day? And we're thankful that you
well,
do that every day?
No, just do the best you can. That's all you can
well,
do.
Well, and that's good. That's
you know,
all good. So
I have to go, you know, too up, deep in there.
Laugh. And
have a good laugh.
Yeah.
Giggle and have fun. Try to have fun sometimes.
There we go. Yeah. I was going to say, mm-hmm. I'm thankful for just looking to the joy of every day and knowing on whatever level that those small interactions that we do with people every day are really the blessings and the purpose of why we're here on the planet, just to be sending love and transformation in just a way that can be joyful and all that. And having the Transformation Cafe, gosh, I'm always thankful for my food. So there you go. It's the nourishment, whether it be for the soul or for the mind, and having food on a lot of different levels, whether we're feeding the soul or the mind or the tummy. And so it's, all of that's good. That's good. So lots and lots of things to be thankful for. So, okay, TD. Hey, I was thinking it would be really great to say, you know, how did you get started in even thinking that you'd want to write a book? So how did that all start out?
Well, this was never my intention. I never in my entire life ever thought I would ever be a novel writer. This is just not anything I ever imagined. And so it just kind of has all come out of a long kind of spiritual journey that got kicked into high gear when I became part of the interfaith community here in Palm Springs.
Okay, and what led you to, I think you were sharing with me earlier today that you had decided to become a minister of that following, and that kind of helped you to kind of open yourself up to just the possibility of writing the way you are now.
Well, again, it wasn't, that was never my intention. I was kind of on this, you know, spiritual journey, and I was learning, and I had begun to take ministerial training classes from Dr. Sharon, and then I would go to the Wednesday night guest speaker services. That's how I met you,
mm-hmm.
one of your wonderful presentations. And
mm-hmm. Thank you.
Over the years there were, we always had these really great world-class speakers, just like Robin, and they're healers and teachers and practitioners of every kind of spiritual practice you can think of. And the whole idea is that, you know, what touches one person, what opens one person to that side of their lives is not going to be the same thing that will work for somebody else. And so, you know, there are many paths to God, and they're all good, but you have to find your own. And I was attending a Wednesday night service a couple of years back, and the guest speaker was a channeler. Her name is Araya Volcare. You can find her online. And I didn't know from channelers. I didn't know what that was, or I had never encountered anybody that had that particular gift. And she proceeded to blow me absolutely away. I was the most astonishing thing I'd ever seen. She had questions from the audience. Most of them were personal questions about this or that or the other that was going on in their lives. And then she would channel an ascended master or Jesus or Mary or Joseph or, I mean, there was the list was endless of these ascended masters and beings, enlightened beings, that she spoke through to answer these people's questions. And it was just the most astonishing thing I'd ever seen. The energy in the room just was off the charts. And I went to her afterwards, and I offered my services at the time, transcribing, you know, I did a lot of transcribing of Dr. Sharon's messages, and I offered Araya the same service. And in exchange, she gave me a personal reading, and then later an all-day how-to-do-it-yourself session, how to channel. And that process, my questions and what I was working on was, questions about poverty and wealth consciousness, which is what I was trying to transform certain aspects of. And as she taught me and one other student how to channel, the process involved, part of the process of sort of getting into that state of mind where you can open yourself to these energies out there and receive some knowledge. One of the things she said was ask your ego, which is the conscious mind, to step aside for a moment. And when I did that, literally in my head, I asked my ego. I said, step aside. You're okay. You know, and no one's going to destroy you or anything. You know, you're safe. But it's time for you to step aside and watch the show. And boy, was it a show! The next thing I knew, I was speaking in the voice of King Midas. You know, and giving wisdom about wealth and wealth consciousness and so forth. And it just, the whole experience, along with everything else that I was doing at the time to, you know, in my spiritual practice, it just broke me open like an egg, you know? these images and, you know, people and places and things, they were just, it was just, it kind of gushing out of me. I was, and I didn't know what it all meant, or what it was. I couldn't sleep at night, so I went to Dr. Sharon. I said, "I think I'm on metaphysical overload. I can't sleep at night. You know, there's always these images and like voices coming out of me." And she said, "Well, journal it. You know, we all know how great journaling is for getting, you know, feelings and things out." And so I began to journal. I began to write, but it was not a standard, psychological journal. It was this very first story of that is now entitled "People of the Bear Mother," and I was looking through the eyes of this young woman. And I could see, she was in some kind of a bark lodge, like a lot of Native American Indians used. And I could see this old shaman with his white hair and everything poking his head through a leather door flap. And it just went on from there. And all I knew was that this young girl was a gifted rock artist, and that she was to go into this cave, which is an actual cave in the south of France that I had studied about and many years before. And there I was. And all I knew about the story was that she was to go to be taken into the cave and be initiated as a shaman herself, and that she was to add a new piece of animal art to this cave. That's the only part of the story that I knew. And as I wrote, I was just carried along by the story. I didn't know where it was going. I didn't know what was going to happen. And the cave itself gave most of the structure to the story. And as she is initiated in these parts of the cave, certain parts of her life kind of come out and so forth. And then, of course, at the end of the story, which I won't give that away, I had no idea where the story was going to take me. So it was the most amazing, magical, creative experience I'd ever had, and completely different from the kind of scholarly left brain writing that I had done all my life.
Yeah. One thing that I thought was really fascinating is when TD was actually sharing with me about the book after what I had been there talking at Interfaith. He shared a little bit about the cave and things like that. And one of the other testimonials I wanted to read was from It's from Dr. Theodore Telford, PhD. He's in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at the University of California at Riverside. And he was saying how it was the stunning discovery of the Chauvet Cave, which is this cave that's in Europe, upon Austin's fictional account is closely based and has revolutionized and upended all earlier conceptions of the art history in the life of the early Europe. Austin gives us a perfectly plausible interpretation of Chauvet's masterpiece of the animal art. It's the earliest known examples of the magnificent burst of creativity that began to be expressed in painted caves of Western Europe back 35,000 years ago. And I was like, wow. So can you share a little bit about how, it's just how, TD, how you were just like even blown away by that too, because wasn't it kind of a synchronistic where you were writing about it and then they were showing some things that they had just found in some of the archaeological digs and things like that after you had, been experiencing these things through your times of meditation and doing the channeling?
Well, I've always been very interested in archaeology, even though that's not my, my background. In archaeology and history and anthropology and, all of these topics. And I just read a lot of books from all over the place. And a number of years ago, at least 7 or 8 years ago, I bought this beautiful art book on Chauvet Cave, and it was just full of all these beautiful photographs of the animal art that they discovered in this cave. And it turns out that Chauvet is a recently discovered cave. It was only discovered in 1994 or 95. And it, of course, it's absolutely pristine because it hasn't been, vandalized.
Contaminated.
And so the scientists got to go in and excavate this cave very, very carefully so that absolutely nothing was lost. And they're still excavating it. It's not open to the public. And, but I mean, there are even animal and human footprints in the mud of this cave that are still, that are 35,000 years old. I mean, it's just absolutely astonishing. And the artwork is, it is as sophisticated and beautiful as anything that comes along 15,000 years later, which is the more familiar case that we probably, a lot of people had a chance to go visit. Lascaux Cave in another part of France is the one that everyone is more familiar with. But
very
the
famous.
Artwork is not in any way inferior to that. And the old conception used to be, well, you know, these early European peoples came in and they had artwork, but it was very crude and it was, you know, and over thousands of years it evolved into what we see at Lascaux. Well, that's not so at all. I mean, it just seems to have burst in this creative outflowing, you know, of spiritual artistry, and that's what all of this animal art is. These caves were used for very specific and sacred, holy purposes for the initiation of young people to become adult men and women, and certainly for the initiation of shamans. And the caves are about transformation of consciousness. All of them are. And when you go in, you are to experience the mystery and the wonder of the unseen powers. And that's what these were all used for. Well, I got this book, and I was going through it, and I was just fascinated by it. And the artwork just spoke to me. There were certain pieces of it, and I said, I know what that means. And this was 8 years ago. And then when I had this kind of creative opening, and immediately my mind went to that particular place and that particular time. And it's the stories are now kind of unfolding from this earliest time period.
Okay, TD, do you know, I think I wound up watching something about that where they had shown, I think it was a National Geographic special or something like that, that there was actually... And the astrological signs and things like that, that were done on like the ceiling of one of the caves. Do you remember that?
I think I have. Once you get into the book, I think there's. I'm almost certain that there is some. There's a lot. Most of the cave is animal art, but there are a lot of other kind of. Symbols and signs that they use, and I think some of the signs refer to the Pleiades, that a collection of 7 stars that rises at certain times of the year and then sets at other times of the year, and it kind of it's a signal for the change of season. And peoples all across the world know about the Pleiades. They're called the 7 Sisters and so forth. Well, I think that's in one place. I think that's one of the, it's not an astrological sign, but it's a constellation.
Right. That's what I was meaning to say. It's that the whole ceiling of one of the caves has all the different constellations in it, and they're all lined up in the seasonal way that they follow one another. And they didn't realize that.
That may be a later cave. In this one, I know that the Pleiades is there, and I think the constellation that we call Orion is also in there. It turns out that Orion is in a lot of cultures around the world, amongst the shamans, that is a particularly significant constellation for shamans.
Yeah.
And beyond that, you know, they weren't astronomers. That comes much later. But they were certainly aware of those constellations, and they had a certain meaning. And you can kind of, based on where they are located in the cave, I think I know what this means. I think I know what that means. And the artwork is just as I describe it. It's just as it was discovered and is described by these archaeologists and scientists who have excavated the cave. Now, in terms of their meaning, that is entirely my interpretation. And I'm sure some people will agree with me and some people won't, but that's what the cave art says to me.
So just how did that feel when you realized that, you know, you were in your visions, you were actually seeing something that was that far back in history, even in,
well,
in your own
it,
sense of your
really
imagination
amazing.
With it. Yeah.
And I learned this from from the channelers, but a lot of other teachers talk about this whole process. You know, we know that our thoughts, our conscious thoughts, are just a very tiny part of our total mind, and a good part of that is, in fact, the vast majority is kind of what we would call subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And you can channel, or if you're doing psychotherapy, your psychotherapist, maybe through hypnosis or relaxation techniques, can get you to channel at a level somewhere in your subconscious, maybe back to your early childhood where you had traumas and so forth affect the rest of your life. We all know how that works.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that you can channel at deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper levels. Maybe you're channeling in terms of maybe an ancestral kind of DNA level. There are things that your ancestors went through that have been passed on through to you, and you can kind of tap into that. They're, human race consciousness, human race memories that are built into our DNA that we probably can channel at that level. Maybe you're channeling at past lives. You know, there may be traumas or something that happened to you in another lifetime that are affecting you now. And there's, kind of therapeutic value in finding out what that is, because if you can't feel it, you can't heal it, right?
Right, exactly.
And you can channel deeper and deeper and deeper levels until you're channeling at the level of the ascended masters and angels and archangels and so forth. And
mm-hmm.
So I didn't know what I was, where this stuff was coming from, sometimes because I didn't know at the time, because I'm not a writer, that it's very unusual to write a novel using the first person voice. Most authors will have a kind of all-seeing, omniscient, narrator who's telling you what's happening in the story and what people are thinking and what that person
mm-hmm.
over there is doing. And in my story, everything is told to the through the eyes and of this young girl.
Uh-huh.
And all of my other stories, and some of which I have six chapters into this one and 10 chapters into that one, all of them are written in first person. And I'm thinking, well, am I channeling at some kind of a past life level here?
Uh-huh.
I really can't answer that. I just know that these things come up and I feel them. And I, it's like I'm experiencing them again. And so
right.
In the prologue, which I kind of use, it's used to set up the whole series of eventual, I don't know how many books are going to be in this series. I just don't know. Whatever comes out is what comes out. And I'm just delighted with that process. But the prologue is set up and the story is told by one soul and all of the avatars that this soul has, or some of the avatars that this soul has lived in previous lifetimes. That's the way I'm using that as a device to give the whole series a structure.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners, I had been listening to an interview with Hank Wesselman. Are you familiar with Hank Wesselman?
I'm not.
Okay. Hank Wesselman is actually an anthropologist, and he kind of had a similar experience that you did. He basically had learned how to do meditation and started doing the deep breathing and things like that. And he winded up going into the same kind of similar situation that you did, where he just had winded up having himself transformed into this other lifetime, and he winded up talking to this other character that he had, and he winded up writing. I need to look. I'm going to look to see if he has the name of his books in here. But similar type of thing, where he basically was literally thrown into this other reality that was in the future. I think it was like 3,500 years in the future, and just very interesting that and it was just like, well. And, you know, it's kind of the other side of the spectrum. Instead of having it be in the past, it was actually in the future, about having things being able to survive, and what did that look like. And because, like, one of his books is called Messages from the Future. It was called Spirit Walker. Yes, Spirit Walker, Medicine Maker, and Vision Seeker. And they were all different messages from this other, and he believes that it was actually one of his other reincarnations in the future that he was able to connect to. So it's just like, whether we go in the past or whether we go in the future, it's a way of connecting to something that's bigger than us. We kind of scratch your head and just say, how could this be? But on a certain level, I think it's when you're in the right place at the right time, you basically are just, like you said, if you're surrendering to something that's bigger than you, these wonderful messages can come through that can be very profound, and a message that the world needs to hear.
Yeah, and I think a lot of artists and musicians and people in their everyday lives, you know, you open to that, and it transforms your life utterly. And I mean, you don't have to be a novelist or a musician or an artist of some kind, but they're just people who are making their living doing those kinds of things. But you know, that creative spirit. It comes out of connecting to something bigger than yourself. You're absolutely right, Matt.
Yeah, you had Dr. Jonathan Young, which is a PhD. He was the founding curator of the Joseph Campbell Archives in the Center for Story and Symbol in Santa Barbara. He said that Joseph Campbell taught us the inner dimensions of the heroic journey which we are all to take. In The People of the Bear Mother, Austin tells a story that reveals the origins and the meanings of ancient cave paintings, and we learn about the power of initiation through the animal envoys of the unseen powers that are still inhabiting our universe. This is truly a mythical tale that will remain an imagination for a lifetime. So I don't know about a lifetime. Maybe it's like lifetime and a lifetime and a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Now you're blowing my mind.
Okay, now I'm blown his mind. Well, and I think part of it's just like, you know, where are you at with reincarnation? Where are you at with the fact that, I mean, I totally started believing in reincarnation when I really realized that there were people that I was meeting in my life, and I would meet them for the first time, and yet there was such a sense of knowing that I knew this person. You know, it's just like when I met Jamie, I mean, I totally, on some level, I felt like I really felt connected to him, and I knew him. I was already comfortable with him on a certain level. So there wasn't a matter of, you know, really having to get connected to someone in a certain way. And it was, what's really fun is when you open to that level of, when you are comfortable with someone already, it's almost like if you look at them and just say, oh, how have you been? Like, how do you do? It's nice to meet you. It's more like, oh, how have you been, and how's it going so far in this lifetime? So it makes it a lot, in some ways, it's just kind of fun to come from that perspective. And there's just such a comfortableness when you come from that level and being open to looking at one another and saying, you know, it's like with Avatar when it said, I see you. It's almost like, I see you and I remember you. So it's not like we have to start from the beginning again. We're just carrying on with the same soul connections that we've had with one another, but yet we're you know, it's in this lifetime as opposed to other lifetimes, which I think is just it's fun, and it's very enchanting to look at it that way and recognize that we're all connected, and that, you know, all of us have something to be saying on it. And I just am very grateful to you, TD, for the fact that, you know, it took some courage to put this out here, and it's so wonderful because weren't you saying that with your publisher, you're actually you're his, one of his top authors now?
I'm one of my publisher's bestsellers,
Yeah, he's just, people are just really resonating with his book, which is awesome. Yeah, it's very, very awesome.
Well, I do have a lot of that whole thing in there about, you know, you have these connections with people, and I believe that, you know, we get the experiences we need in our lives to grow and unfold and to transform our lives. But it doesn't necessarily happen, you know. We may reject the lesson, and then we get to repeat it again if we do that. And we may live our whole lives playing the same story over again and not really getting the lesson. And I firmly believe that when we leave the planet, we take with us everything that we were working on, and we get to repeat it over and over until we finally get it, and then we can move on to something else. And it's people and the relationships in our lives that we work out some of the most important lessons that we have. So I'm using and have in this book a device to identify different avatars across lifetimes and eventually across books in the series. And
can you describe what an avatar is for people who may not be familiar with that term when it comes to something what we're talking about?
Well, it's the new body or the new manifestation of in this particular lifetime of another soul. And as this, you know, you have people will talk about an avatar of Krishna or something like that. The Dalai Lama is an avatar of a bodhisattva, you know. And it's the soul reborn in another body. If you saw the movie Avatar, that's where that came from. They were taking this human soul and putting it into a new body. And I'm using the device of unique or distinctive eye colors to identify the same soul in different lifetimes.
Well, I like how on computer nowadays you've got your, you can have your little avatar when you're on Facebook or. you don't even need to drop your body. You know, you just get online and you can have avatars for different programs depending on where you're at. You can pick your how you're gonna look and what you're gonna wear.
Same person, really.
Have a different persona depending on what you've got going on the computer, which is really kind of, it's fun, but yet it's kind of a profound thing of projecting yourself out in kind of a different way, which is fun.
Yeah.
So it's very,
and
very fun.
So this young girl, she may or may not learn the lessons that, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Idea too. And that certainly is what's happening with this very first book. How ready is she? You know, it looks like she may be ready. Maybe she isn't. She is, you know. And that's what the whole story is about. It's about the vows
we make. You really caught me was TD was generous enough to go ahead and provide his prologue and also the first chapter. And he'd kind of gotten me going by just saying, you know, the head shaman pops his head into the tent and looking for little bear, right? Her name's Little Bear. And and basically says, okay, we need to have you come to the sacred cave and do a painting. And she's like, ooh, me, you know. It's kind of like Harry Potter when he says, I'm a what, when it comes to being a wizard. So it's just really interesting.
All prophets pretty much have that same reaction when they're called. You know, Moses did the same thing.
I'm a what? I'm a
thing.
Exactly. I'm going to go off and do this thing. I don't think so. Here you're saying I'm not an author, and here you are, you know, doing it, and it's happening, and you're excited and willing to take on a new life, which is really wonderful. I always think it's spirit too when we get challenged to do some things that we never would think of, something that it would come into our lives. And all of a sudden it's just dropping in our lap, and, you know, will we take that on as a challenge and or just an exciting opportunity instead of making it something that we'll reject because it's just out of our comfort zone, you know?
That's right.
It's always perfect when it's something we wouldn't pick for ourselves. I'm like, well, spirit's in the mixer because I wouldn't have picked that, you know? So.
Well, that's what I was saying before. I mean, my intention was never to become a novel writer. My intention was to, I was working on, you know, some poverty and wealth consciousness, and, you know, and I was happy to get the advice of King Midas, you know, an ascended master who knows all about wealth and everything. And out of that intention, this whole new life has emerged. It's really amazing, magical, and I accept it. You know, I thank you. You know, I said before, this is what I'm really thankful for this year, because it's
good.
A whole new life has opened up for me, and I'll be doing this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and you're not kidding. Is like we'll get into that in a little bit here. We had about 20 minutes left, so one of my questions I wanted to ask TD was. How do you think your book can be helping us now? It's like, if I read this book, how do you feel it would help me to understand, you know, growth and change during just right now in their present times, taking Little Bear's adventure and putting that into my life? How do you think that would help the reader to help with me expanding themselves and understanding things in a different way?
Well, I think it helps to look, especially look back that far, because these are our ancestors. I mean, these are us. And you can't imagine somebody who lived 35,000 years ago as having anything in common with us today, right? Think of, you know, these cavemen, and, you know, they're rude, and their lives are rude and brutish and short, and but they were human beings. They have all of the same hopes and fears and love and hates and aspirations and desires and sufferings that every human being has ever had on the planet. And so by looking at her life, the teachings of the cave, which teach you the universal truths about the universe and being having a human life under any circumstances. And what I meant by that is such things as what you give out comes back, is what you get back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a universal law of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what you do to others is what comes back to you. That's a universal law of cause and effect. And that is taught, I believe, in that cave. And if you're going to be become a human person in those societies, you know, of course, they were the men were primarily hunters, and the women, they were out gathering and doing their thing. But you had to transform your consciousness. I'm thinking now in this way, and now I, as an adult, self-responsible adult, I have to think in this way. And so what the cave does is, in a very short period of time, it transforms the consciousness of these people, and they learn the values and the ways of behaving that are appropriate for their society. And one of the big things for them was to acknowledge, if you were a man, to acknowledge the feminine, you know, side of your life, the creative feeling, giving and receiving side of who you are. And that was important to be well-balanced and to live a harmonious life then, just as it is now. And if you don't, you know, there are some really serious consequences for you as a person. And I think in a lot of ways, the way these people were living is much more like what we're dealing with now, in a lot of ways, than almost any other way of life that sort of came in between. And these were the most egalitarian societies that we know of. They're probably even more egalitarian than our own. That means there are really no big distinctions between people.
Mm-hmm.
And men and women, you know, what they did was just as valuable. That is, what the women did was just as valuable as what the men did. And everyone sort of acknowledged that. People were, I don't believe that there was such thing as arranged marriages in these kinds of societies. You know, women were self-responsible and empowered, as we would call it today.
Mm-hmm.
They get to choose who their spouses are, you know, just like we do today. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that's the way those people lived. And a lot of the research on hunting societies that at least survived long enough for scientists to look at them, that's exactly the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
The role of gay people and it was very different. I mean, it was just another way of being human. And so by looking at these things, I think you can see, you say, oh, you know, that's the way I feel. Or that's the way, and here these people are living so long ago. Why is it that these things are still true? That's because the universal truths of human is different. And
right.
I think that cave is just, it lays out many of them. And
mm-hmm.
Especially the one about living in unity and harmony.
Mm-hmm.
with others and with the male and female sides of us is the way to peace and to a true human life. And that's the message
mm-hmm.
of the cave is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also liked it. It's just the level of honoring nature and, you know, the surroundings of knowing that, you know, it was all connected and being a
yeah.
part of something bigger than themselves. That was definitely kind of an underlining thing. You know, I'm sensitive to that, but I definitely saw that as a part of just what you were, you know, being guided into with the cave. I love the cave, too, because just on a, you know, symbolic level, just the going into the shadow levels of ourselves and the things that are hidden and
yeah.
having that be such a powerful and really dynamic level to just the soul level, growth level, and challenge levels that, you know, are we willing to go to those dark places that, you know, really can help us to evolve and just develop as a human being. It just, you know, was really great. And a part of the book that's really wonderful, too, is at the beginning of it, there's this wonderful drawing of a map that's got the cave, the great cave of the bear mother. And there's just so much detail in the what he had forwarded to me of just the different levels of the different oracles and the heart mother's lodges. So there's lodges and passages and all different kinds of stuff that are in here. And I just think it's really very significant, especially if you studied any kind of thing with Native American ways and the way that they're worded and how they're placed on the land. It's very interesting when you look at that. And even kind of from a feng shui perspective, there's wisdom there. So it's interesting that it's on a lot of multiple layers and things like that. So we've got about 10 minutes left, TD. I was wanting to ask you, we can get this book on Amazon.com. So if anybody who's interested in wanting to get the People of the Bear Mother by TD Austins, it's available on Amazon. And are there plans of having it come into an audio version?
Yeah, the audio version is being produced right now. They're probably about halfway finished with the reading of it, and it should be out on before the end of the year. That's what I'm shooting
mm-hmm.
for. you can also go to my website, tdaustinps.com, and from there, you can go to Barnes & Noble or Amazon, or eventually when the audio version is available, it'll all be right there on my website. And
cool.
The website talks about the book. And
Who actually does the audio version? Or is somebody chosen for that? Or do you do it yourself?
Say that again.
Do you do the audio version yourself, or do you have somebody chosen for that? Work.
The audio book is being read by a young woman who kind of, I would send a few audition tapes, and her voice just sounded right to me.
Right.
I wanted it in the voice of a young woman because that's who's narrating the story. And I may read one of my own books down the road when it's appropriate. But for this first one, I really needed the voice of Little Bear. And I think I've found her.
I look forward to it having come out because I was telling Austin it's so nice to have something like that, whether you're driving in the car or just in this place where you're doing walking or exercising and you can get into the book without necessarily having to read it. It's just really wonderful to have that as just another option to have it go out. I hope it can come out before Christmas. That would be a wonderful idea for some people to be able to give as a gift, too. My goodness. Hopefully that can be available before the before Christmas comes. So that'll be really great. So
I have the first chapter of the audio book as a free download on my website.
Okay, make sure we say your website again, so make sure people write it down correctly.
TD Austin, TS for Palm Springs, .com.
Okay. So if anybody's interested, I didn't know that. I'm going to go and listen to her voice to see if it sounds like what I thought Little Bear was going to sound like. So that'll be pretty awesome. So, okay, so what's the next book going to be about, Mr. TD?
Well, as all this stuff started coming out, there are all these different stories at different times, and I have decided, I'm kind of suffering from the opposite of writer's block,
Mm-hmm.
I've got too much to deal with, and so I've decided to use my left brain, a linear way of thinking, and I'm just going to organize all the stories that are coming out
mm-hmm.
according to how early or how late they are. So this next book is set roughly 7,500 BC in southern central, what is now Turkey, which is another really famous archaeological site that I just have felt drawn to. I read about these sites and cultures and discoveries from all around the world, but there's just a handful of them that I just feel drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, when you meet somebody and you feel like you know them,
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I feel about this particular place. And this place mm-hmm. is the first city-sized collection of human beings to come together in one place. And it's also, they call it a city, but it's really like a big village because everybody is, they're farmers. They're not hunting and gathering anymore, but they're settled in one place and they're farming wheat and barley, and they are keeping domesticated animals, sheep and cattle for the first time. This is mm-hmm. the place where cattle were first domesticated, and
wow.
it's from this
okay.
place that all the world's cattle eventually came from. They kind of diffused out from here.
Mm.
And so this is the story, and this is the story of a young boy, and the main relationship in this story is with his older sister. And so
okay.
it's dedicated to that special
sibling
love
relationship.
Connection. Yeah, between children of the same mother. And again, the story kind of started out, and this young man who hasn't yet come of age and, you know, gone through the rites of passage of his people, become man. He's sitting on a kind of a watch platform with his sister, and they're talking about life and, you know, so forth. It's kind of the setup and the background chapter. But they are, he's out on a watchtower at harvest time, and it's almost harvest time, and he's there to protect the grain, the ripening grain, from deer and pigs and things that are coming in that might eat the grain. And I see the beginning of the story, and then I just along for the ride. I don't know how this whole story is going to turn out yet.
Uh-huh.
I'm really anxious to find out. So I'm about 50 pages into it, and I keep getting glimpses. Sometimes it's very annoying because I try to, like when I go to services on Sunday, or when I go to listen to a speaker like you on Wednesday night, and we do meditations, or you try to go within and so forth. And instead of just going to that nondescript kind of peaceful place, which a lot of us are trying to do when we're letting go of all our daily life and so forth, I keep slipping into one of these stories or another. And I get bits and pieces, and I say, oh, well, there's that part of that story. And it just kind of comes. It kind of comes. And,
do you get them when you're driving in the car?
Occasionally. The other time that I really keep getting these very strong messages or pieces of this story or that or the other is when I'm at the gym working out on the treadmill or something.
Okay, because your mind is kind of open and you're just moving along. And, yeah, I've heard, too, a lot of people get things when they're in the shower.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's something
about
moving
your body. Yeah, because your mind's just kind of open and you're just kind of there. And
exercising.
Yeah.
Moving the body that somehow triggers something. And we have memories stored all over our bodies. It's not just in our heads. And, you know, people talk about muscle memory, and I think that goes very deep. That sometimes will trigger it. Sometimes people who are getting massage, you know, they have these tremendous emotional feelings and stuff, and they don't know why. And so there's a lot of it right in your body there. That's true.
That's very true.
Yeah.
So, Rob, TD and Jamie, we got like 2 minutes left. So, how many books do you think you're going to be writing, TD?
Well, when I first started writing, I thought I was going to be able to tell the whole story in one book. And then here I am 300-400 pages into People the Bear Mother, and I say, oh, I'm only begun. And then there were two or three other major stories that wanted to come out, and then there was three or four more, and at this point, I can see maybe six or seven novels down the road.
And then I told him he's going to start having, he'll have screenwriters going and giving screen interpretations of this, and also we're going to start having movies. And
I certainly
You're going to turn into a Harry Potter, what can I say? It's going to be like, you know, the Bear Mother here. Yeah, the Bear Mother trilogies or whatever. I know seven of these guys. So, well, we thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for being here on such a special. Yeah, we've done our hour, guys. We're down to last minute here.
Oh, wow, that went really fast.
And everybody have a good Thanksgiving. Be safe.
Yeah, you too.
Right.
So, again, thank you both for coming, and we really thank everybody. We're going to wish them happy holidays. Next week we're going to be having a wonderful teacher on beta therapy, and we're looking forward to having her coming on board, and be looking forward to December. We've got Dr. Stephen Ward, who's going to be on a couple different shows talking about spinal the mysteries of the spine and actually how he can actually interpret a lot of emotional issues with that. So we thank you for coming, and we'll talk to you the next time when you're coming to the cafe.
Take care.
Thank you.
This has been another wonderful evening filled with lively and unusual dinner conversation and you. We are so glad you decided to join us. You make it special, and we are always happy to hear from you at Transformation Cafe. You can find out more about the people on our shows by clicking on our website, transformation-cafe.com, and checking out where all our other previous shows are available on demand, or here at Blog Talk Radio Transformation Cafe. If you are interested in appearing as a guest chef, you can email us at show@transformation-cafe.com. Thanks again, travel well, and we will see you next time here at Transformation Cafe. Good night.